Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. This hour, the biggest security threats coming in 2017. The past year saw hacks of unprecedented scale and temerity, and if history is any guide, this year should yield more of the same. Joining us this hour is Lily Hay Newman, a security writer at Wired. Much of her reporting on digital security can be found online at wired.com. Before this job, she was a staff writer at Slate. We're going to be talking about all of these threats in some detail during the course of the hour and welcoming your phone calls as well. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. And just a reminder that we're also having our Winter Pledge membership drive right now. So your phone calls or you're going to our site, WPR.org, or 888-202-2552 to support this station during this membership drive. Very important and very much appreciated. All right, let's delve right into this big subject, and we thank you very much for being with us this hour. Hi, Lily. Hello, Lily. Are you there? Oh, I'm sorry. I got the wrong button up. Hi, Lily.
Hi. How's there? It going?
Hi. Well, now that I got you on the air, things are fine. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm happy to be here. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much for being with us. Well, let's start with, you've got a number of different areas, but let's start with this Russian hacker story because it's a story that isn't going away. Do you believe, you say in the article in Wired that Russia may be emboldened their digital intruders to try new targets because it would appear that they were somewhat successful, if not very successful, if not wildly successful, with their efforts during the presidential election?
Yeah, I think, you know, we can talk about Russia and their specific, situation and relations with the U.S. and the election. But just generally, I think the situation with the election sets a precedent more broadly in terms of the reality that the U.S. and, you know, countries in general do not have a Geneva Convention for cyber war. We don't have a plan for the rules of conduct or how, you know, countries can appropriately react, defend themselves, seek some kind of accord with other countries for how to handle these situations. So I think that's the main thing that came across, you know, to me in the past 6 months, or, you know, really going back longer, is that we're trying to hammer all this stuff out and figure out what our posture is going to be, the U.S., and how countries are going to interact in cyberspace.
Mm-hmm. Do you know if there are efforts underway, and I don't even know what kinds of efforts there would have to be, in Germany, in the Netherlands, in France? They're going to be having elections, and we've heard that they're worried about the Russians doing the same to them as they did to the United States. Are efforts underway to keep that from happening, and is it almost impossible to keep a country from hacking your elections?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely increased awareness, and each country has its own sort of voting structure, voting system, and so differences in, you know, what types of work they might be doing in advance. But there, you know, there's two components, right? There's protecting election infrastructure, voting technology, the, you know, literal physical ways that we cast our votes. And then there's, which is not, you know, just to be clear, what the evidence shows happened in the U.S. There, you know, we don't have evidence of Russian vote tampering or tampering in our voting, you know, technology. But there's this whole other type of election hacking, which, as you say, is, you know, very difficult to defend against, which has to do with leaking information, data breaches. To do that leaking, you know, as we saw with the DNC hack, fake news, the rise of fake news, all different types of disinformation campaigns and influence strategies that all fall under the umbrella of election hacking. So, you know, defending critical infrastructure, which in the U.S. we debate whether we want voting infrastructure to be categorized as critical by Homeland Security. But defending that infrastructure is a concrete step that you can take. No one has perfect security, but you can take, efforts far beyond what anyone has done in the past to make a more concerted effort to defend that voting technology. But then in terms of defending all the other systems that are involved in an election, I mean, I think the biggest thing we learned from the 2016 U.S. presidential election is that an election is much more broad. The apparatus of an election is much more broad than just the voting technology. So, yeah, I mean, every political party, every person of prominence, a pundit in an election, all those parties need to be taking much more careful precautions than they were in the past.
How hard would it be, do you know, to tamper with the election machines?
Well, in the U.S., it's very varied country to country. So, but I can speak to the U.S. We are very varied within our country because our election systems are run state by state. So, some states have a mix of digital voting and physical voting. Some do digital recording of votes versus, we've been phasing out things like physical punch cards, but there's a whole diversity of the voting technology that's in place in the U.S. People talk about how that's a benefit to the U.S. Voting infrastructure because that diversity makes it hard to just find one vulnerability and kind of wreck the whole thing. You literally could not do that because there are so many voting systems. That being said, I at least don't view diversity or sort of old tech that was not built with cybersecurity in mind as the optimal defense. You know, it's certainly a nice fringe benefit that because we, hold states' rights so dearly and want, states to be the arbiters of their elections and, that it's a nice fringe benefit that leads to diversity that makes it harder to hack the entire system all in one go. But I don't really think it means that we're just set,
Mm-hmm.
I think there's definitely, and part of the problem the way I see it is that if one area of the vote is compromised, that is a significant concern for the entire election,
right?
Even if the other results are valid, we can't just have one state that doesn't get to vote, or we throw out their votes or something and we say, well, it doesn't matter, we have 49 other states, right? That's not going to work. So just because we do have this diversity, that doesn't mean there aren't vulnerabilities and that there couldn't be problems.
So tell me, because I don't understand the technology here very well, but after all, we sent people to the darn moon. We're sending all these rockets into outer space and going into other galaxies, which seems terribly sophisticated technologically to me. Why is it difficult to just come up with systems where you need extra special protection to make sure that something can't be hacked? Why can they be hacked?
The way I think about it is with a physical analogy. It's the, at least for me, the easiest thing, to first start thinking about this. Our houses, we have locks on our doors, we have locks on our windows, but we all know, if you take a second to think about it, that our houses are not very secure. Someone could break the window, someone could get the garage door open with a crowbar, lots of stuff. So what we do with our daily physical security, with our loved ones, with everything that's, most important to us and that we hold dear, is deterrence, right? The cost of breaking into our houses. And I mean, there are a lot of burglaries. I've had a burglary in my home. But the cost of breaking in and, the deterrence to doing that from sort of law enforcement patrolling or neighbors across the street who might see, plus the monetary cost and the time cost of planning an attack and breaking into a home, is in general too great. so people don't break into our houses. Obviously, sometimes they do. But that's how I kind of think about security to start out, is just there isn't any total security just as a concept. You know, any wall, you can tunnel under the wall or, you know, go around the wall or climb over the wall. There's always a way, but what you're looking for is a high cost to break in.
Mm-hmm.
Or a high, you know, whether it's a monetary cost or some other type of deterrence, depending on the situation. So what we're looking for with something like election security, you know, just in the past, and I mean, some people have been talking about the need to secure our election and voting infrastructure for a long time. So it's not like no one has ever mentioned this before, but overall, in terms of motivation to really get something off the ground, there hasn't been a sort of mainstream collective desire to do that until relatively recently. But even so, even whenever you get there as a group and as a country, we're, you know, maybe ready to do it or maybe not. You know, not everyone, people aren't all agreeing that it should be classified as, you know, the voting technology should be classified as critical infrastructure, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But even if everyone agrees, the goal isn't perfect security, because that's, you know, never really an achievable goal. The goal is much, much, much higher cost to break in, much higher deterrence. I mean, the DNC hack is another good example. The hacks, the techniques that the hackers used to gain entry were very rudimentary, basically just walk right in, you know, use a spear phishing attack to get a password, use the password to get onto the network, that type of thing. That, you know, that's basically walking in the front door. It's not even really super technical, complicated hacking. We want it to be a lot harder. You know, if somebody's going to, and, you know, right. The Office of Personnel Management hack, another kind of hack that, at least in my mind, really goes down in history, you know, as a, that was perpetrated by Chinese hackers. That was the Obama administration attribution. You know, they were on the network lurking for, I believe it was a year and a half, or maybe it was 9 months, or, you know, some very significant period of time, lurking on the network, doing recon, collecting data. What you're looking for is a much higher cost for infiltrating, for getting in. So,
all right, we're going to move to other problem areas of security threats coming in 2017. The past year, according to a piece in Wired, saw hacks of unprecedented scale and temerity. Probably many of you have a lot to say about the Russian hack of the DNC and concerns on the part of Germany and France and the Netherlands. They have elections coming up, and they fear that the Russians are doing similar things to their computer systems. Our guest this hour is a security writer at Wired, Lily Hay Newman. Our phone number, if you'd like to join this conversation on air, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network. This is Wisconsin Public Radio's Winter Membership Drive, and I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandi, and we're here to ask you to invest just a few minutes of your time to support your future WPR listening. Make your gift now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Last hour, we heard from 18 returning and new members. Thank you greatly for all of those pledges. And right now, Kathleen, we have a dollar-for-dollar match.
Okay.
It's your favorite kind of hour. Up to $2,500. This generous match is from current members, including Paul from Madison. And it means they'll match every dollar you give up to $2,500.
Yeah, it's such a nice thing because it's, mm-hmm. You know what it is. It means your money is doubled.
Right.
But we need to get to $2,500. It's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. They're going the extra mile here, so they're asking you to go a mile. Double your support for the programs that you love. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You may or may not know this, but the biggest part of WPR's budget, the biggest part is listener support. So while all the funding sources, the state and federal governments and businesses are all truly important, your contribution makes the biggest difference. WPR is an amazing service that it is thanks to listener support. Thanks for your support. So give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's quite phenomenal that more than 20,000 WPR members are proud, sustaining members. That's something, isn't it, Lisa? 20,000 people. They provide a steady and a very reliable stream of funding for Wisconsin Public Radio.
It's really amazing. And you can join their ranks by choosing an amount, $10 a month, let's say, and setting it up on an ongoing basis. And really, it's the best way to support the station you rely on. So you can become a sustainer right at this very moment. You can join. You can be 20,001 sustaining members. Do it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's a big year here for Wisconsin Public Radio. 2017 marks our 100th anniversary. And this membership drive, we thought it would be fun to offer a new version of an old favorite. Ask for the latest WPR t-shirt when you give $10 a month. We're all about Wisconsin, and so is this shirt. It has a really cool geometric design showing Wisconsin and the many connections between WPR and listeners. The shirts are dark blue with light blue printing and come in sizes small through 2XL. Show your support for radio you love with the new WPR t-shirt. Celebrate with us. Ask for yours now when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you missed it, it's WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge during this, our winter membership drive as we celebrate our 100th birthday. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nabandian. We're asking for your support of WPR. And maybe you want to think about a gift amount. $10, $15 a month might be something you could give. We thank you for it.
That's right. And when you think about our world and how complex it is, I think this hour's topic is a good example on that. Like, you rely on Wisconsin Public Radio to turn these really complicated technology studies, political jargon, and all the news of the day into understandable language. I mean, that's what we're doing this very hour. So Wisconsin Public Radio helps make sense of complex ideas so you'll know how they affect you.
And we rely on your financial support to bring you programs that are relevant to your lives. That's why we ask you to make your first ever contribution now. $5, $10 a month during the winter membership drive. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Yeah, maybe you've only discovered Wisconsin Public Radio recently, and this is a great time to make your first gift during our centennial year. And we want you to know that WPR is listener-driven, not profit-driven. We're able to bring you more programming per hour because we don't have to take time out for long blocks of commercials.
Our business is to inform you and to entertain you and provide quality programs for you to enjoy. WPR is your station. It's only possible because listeners like you give what they can to support it. Show your support now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And just this hour, Kathleen, we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $25. It's a great time to pledge because current members, including Paul from Madison, will double every dollar you give. It's their way of inspiring you to support Wisconsin Public Radio. Double the impact of your pledge right now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Yeah, double your money this hour. It's a good thing. You've made the decision to listen to Wisconsin Public Radio. Now make the decision to support Wisconsin Public Radio financially. It's as simple as that. You really can help. Join, renew, or make an extra gift at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
The bottom line really is give the amount that's right for you. And if you need some help figuring that out, think about, say you hear three things a day that you're really glad you've heard. If you paid a dime for each one of those, that would work out to be about $10 a month. Make the contribution right now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. 2552.
And a reminder, our dollar for dollar match still in effect. Mm-hmm. We have 21 pledges to go, Lisa. Give now. It's double your money. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Your support of WPR will go twice as far.
Yeah, it's a really a great hour to get because you can double your money. And when you give $10 a month, you can get the WPR t-shirt. So WPR.org, 888-202-2552. And remember, you've been hearing about this fan package. A gift of any amount enters you in that fan package.
Excellent. Trudy and Frank from Pewaukee say, we listen every day. We appreciate the excellent education applicable to so many areas of our lives. Trustworthy news is at a premium. NPR, WPR have the corner on that. Congrats on 100 years. Thank you, Trudy and Frank.
Great.
And thank you, everybody. Again, Lisa, how do they get a hold of us?
WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
And thank you for all of your help. We need you. We really need you. We have many phone calls coming in as we spend this hour talking about Russian hackers. We have yet to get to ransomware attacks, the potential digital security threats that are on the horizon for this year. Lily Hay Newman is a security writer at Wired, and you can find her writing online at wired.com. Let's go to Don in Appleton, our first caller for you. Hi, Don.
Hi, how you doing?
All right, Don. How are you?
Great. So, in the past, I did activities of a computer that would be considered hacking as a youth. And back then, there was a difference between a hacker and what would be called a cracker. The hackers were usually the activists making a point or doing some sort of computer experimentation. And the crackers were known as the criminals. And to give you an example of how things used to be, I had some associates that would, now would be a sensational hack where they would get like 600,000 people's credit cards, phone numbers, addresses, social security numbers, and they would email them back securely to the admins of whatever company they had breached. Where now, the crackers would obviously take some information like that and they would sell it and injure several different people. So there seems to be a bit of a difference between hackers and crackers. The other instance was is that in my youth, not knowing right away the consequences of doing what would be called hacking activities, the payment or the cost of getting caught by doing something was immense, so much so that I actually quit any of those hacking activities. But it wasn't necessarily the risk of getting caught. It's the weighing between things were so easy to hack into, people with no passwords, and it all related down to one factor, which was human laziness. They're too lazy to take the extra step to put in their patches or to design the software so they did that extra test. Everyone's in such a hurry that our technology is there, in my opinion, to secure the things that we need to do, but we lack the human initiative to actually take action and get it done.
Lily.
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely to what we were talking about before in terms of cost of deterrence and things like that, the question is, will we implement, I totally agree, the technology that already exists to make that happen so that there is enough of a deterrence, either in terms of talking about nation-state warfare or just in terms of everyday hackers stealing credit card numbers, like he was saying. I guess today hackers and crackers are more called black hat hackers and white hat hackers, where the black hats are, you know, actual criminal malicious hackers, and the white hats are hackers who are, you know, doing it either for the intellectual challenge or going about it in a legal way with permission, or, you know, researchers who are trying to do a public good and a public service. And then you have gray hat, you know, which is kind of, activists, or, you know, we could look at the decentralized collective anonymous that, you know, it doesn't have a clear centralized leadership, but is a group of people who at times have done things that we might call quote-unquote good, and at other times things that we might call bad, but, you know, it's all sort of part of an evolving ideology and a sort of a gray morality, you know, so those might be the gray hackers. So I definitely think there's a this is what we run into all the time, is that where are in capitalism, where are the incentives to secure things for, you know, startups, new businesses? The incentives aren't always there, you know, in a short-term financial sense. But, you know, people don't always know to look at the big long-term picture of the potential financial ramifications or other, you know, personal injury, other types of ramifications of not building in strong security mm-hmm. to a system from the start.
Don, thanks for the call. Bill in Madison. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I'd just like to address your talking before about election systems and sort of the securities of it. And I know in 2002 there was a bill passed by Congress called the HAVA bill, which was the Help America Vote Act. And in that bill, we mandated a lot of updating of our election systems, and we went to electronic voting machines. Those voting machines are sent SIM cards from the vendors for every election. Those SIM cards are not allowed to be checked. In fact, the programming inside the machines are not allowed to be checked or audited by this law. I wanted to ask your guest if she saw, as a coding person, any reason why a simple code as an election counting code, which is oftentimes used as an example for beginning coders to build, why there would be proprietary and be kept from audits. What would the reason for that be?
Yeah, so I definitely think proprietary code and proprietary systems are a factor both in this discussion on election hacking, but also more broadly, you know, systems that aren't auditable are, and the sort of the tension between trade secrets and vendors, business secrets versus the need to audit security systems to make sure they're functioning the way vendors claim. That is a very problematic tension in general, specifically for voting. So HAVA, I think some of the, there is definitely criticism that some of the voting systems that were made available to states through that federal legislation did have these proprietary components. More generally, you know, we lack, and I agree, you know, I think that that is a definite concern. More generally, we lack visibility into many of our systems because of the diversity I was talking about before, you know, the decentralized nature of how we run elections, each election board in each state, you know, not to mention sort of county level, city level, you know, different levels of voting that we do in this country, all has decentralized voting governance. So that creates a real lack of sort of federal level or, you know, national level insight into these systems. So there's a number of reasons that it's difficult to audit the systems at this point. I think business interests or vendor interests should not be our priority in developing voting systems. It should be, you know, open and transparent, auditable systems. But there are a lot of levels at which we currently don't necessarily have the security that we need or the insight into whether it's really there or not.
Thanks so much for your call. We'll take more phone calls for our guests in just a moment. We're talking about the biggest security threats coming in 2017, and we've already had an indication of what some of them are. We will, I promise, move into ransomware expanding its targets. It's become a billion-dollar business for cyber criminals, and she writes that it's on the rise for individuals and institutions. So that is coming up as we continue, and we are welcoming phone calls from you. Our number is 800-486-8655. Also going on this hour, whoop-de-doo, we got a lot going on. We're in our winter membership drive, and it's your support that is the foundation of our budget. It's what makes Wisconsin Public Radio your place for great programs. We'll get back to our guest and to you in a moment. First, Lisa Nalbandian is with me to encourage you to go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 right now to make your gift in support of the programs that you count on.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hello, Lisa.
So we have that dollar for dollar match in effect this hour up until 3 o'clock. from current members, including Paul from Madison. How this works is your gift of $50 turns into $100, $100 turns into $200, and so on. Take advantage of this match and double your support for WPR programs when you give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This is the hour to give. Yep. It's double your money. The Ideas Network is a pretty remarkable place when you think about it. When you think about it, it's an incredibly remarkable place. You have so many programs that inform you, that entertain you. You enjoy this program, probably also On Point, a terrific show, The Larry Mueller Show, Chapter a Day, and so many others.
That's right. It's like you get this like window and this view onto the world like no other. So support this mix of shows that you enjoy on this station with your contribution right now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Listeners who rely on Wisconsin Public Radio are the most dependable source of income for the station, and 9XM members are an important part of that picture. Your 9XM leadership gift of $100 a month or $1,200 a year makes WPR the sustainable resource it is today, tomorrow, and well into the future.
Help us stay strong and grow with your leadership gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might think that Wisconsin Public Radio operates largely with tax dollars, and we do get funding from the federal government and from the state, but listener contributions make up the single largest source of our income.
Your support right now is vital for keeping Wisconsin Public Radio on the air. Now that you know how important it is, how important listener support is for Wisconsin Public Radio, be part of it. Make your pledge. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Now let's admit it. Sometimes we spend money on silly things.
I blew my $8 on this cable. I've got another cable just sitting around the house doing nothing.
Postage to send a care package to my son in Texas that was outrageously expensive.
It might have been dryer sheets on Amazon.
It's pretty easy to make a questionable decision about how we spend our money, and it can be just as easy, and not a bad idea, to make a few sound investments along the way, like supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Listener support is the single largest source of funding at WPR, so make a sound investment with your gift to WPR right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Make your donation in support of the programs you count on. It's double your money this hour. Good hour to give. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nabandian, and we're in our winter membership drive, and we're asking you to pledge. Might be $5 a month, could be $100 a month. We appreciate all of your gifts.
In 1917, a little history of Wisconsin Public Radio, a group of Wisconsinites saw this opportunity to better serve the state, and they used technology, I believe non-hacked technology, to create Wisconsin Public Radio. And a lot of things have changed in the past 100 years, but what's really incredible is that these guiding principles, the why of Wisconsin Public Radio is the same. WPR exists to share information, entertainment, and mostly inspiration with all of you.
Yeah, it's wonderful to think about the visionaries who founded this whole operation. From our earliest days, reporting the weather and crop prices, to groundbreaking educational programs like School of the Air, to award-winning journalism, talk, and entertainment, we are here thanks to you. You tie together our past, our present, our future. So give now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And what a special hour to give, because we have this dollar-for-dollar match up to $2,500 in effect right now. It's a really good time to pledge, because we have current members, including Paul from Madison, who said, you know what, we will double every dollar give this hour. And they do it because they want to inspire you to give to Wisconsin Public Radio. So you can double the impact of your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio is really your radio station. It's the one that wakes you up in the morning, rides with you on your commute, keeps you company during the day.
That's right. And really the specialness of all of this is that you get to decide how much to pay for the programs you enjoy. And a lot of times, I think we've said this, I think first-time donors give like between $5 and $10 a month.
Your gift add up to our single source of funding. Okay. So we're inviting you to become our next new member right now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
I think a lot of listeners think about their contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio as an investment in future listening. So give us a few minutes of your time and your donation of any amount, and in return, you'll get lots of great programs.
You sure will. Donate at WPR.org, 888-202-2552. In just a few minutes, you'll have made a really wise investment, and it's one that pays dividends all year long.
That's true. Our dollar-for-dollar match is still in effect. We have about $200 left to raise. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and your support of WPR will go twice as far.
You can also ask for that latest WPR t-shirt.
Right.
Lisa, it's yours when you give $10 a month or more at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And remember, your gift of any amount, you'll be entered to win the WPR fan package, which I think includes tickets to see On Point in Milwaukee.
Yes, it does, yeah. And that'll be a great event.
So WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And thank you all so much. This is the Ideas Network. Our guest this hour is Lily Hay Newman, a security writer at Wired, and we are talking about the biggest security threats coming in 2017. Our phone number for you to join this conversation with Lily is 800-486-8655. Stuart's been waiting a while. Hi, Stuart.
Well, hello, Kathleen, and hello, Ms. Newman. I'm an IT professional. I've got about 30 years under my belt here.
Yeah.
And one of the things I did appreciate your guest making the distinction of is that when we talk about the Russian hackers, this was about leaks and information that was leaked. So not a whole lot different from the Watergate scandal in the late 60s. But it all comes back to a problem, I think, that technology may not solve, which comes back to, you can put really great security in place, but if people don't follow the rules that you tell them, it really begins to be kind of futile. The best example being the hack at the DNC was a phishing exercise. So he got a fake piece of email. The user, because he wasn't educated by his IT staff effectively, thought it to be real and revealed his login credentials. I think our biggest strength here won't necessarily be from security technology, although it's going to play a part. But it's going to be more important to educate our users to look for things like that, because it's the social engineering that's the best hack right now.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Lily?
Yeah, I mean, I do 100% agree, and I think it is a big factor. But I don't think we can kind of overstate it either way. I think it is a hybrid, because at the same time that is completely true, and, you know, people need to uphold the security protocols, even if they're relatively simple, in order for the security to work. We are also behind on implementing strong security in a lot of areas. You know, recently it sort of comes up over and over again, situations where prominent public figures haven't added two-factor authentication, you know, a second layer of protection to their social media accounts, and people are able to break in. Things like that. So, you know, it does have to do with training people, but it also has to do with whoever does the security work for an entity, whether it's a person or a company or whatever, taking the steps and institutions investing in building in strong security from the start. So I completely agree. I just also, I don't want it to take away from understanding that, you know, there's both factors at play.
As somebody who's been in the field a long time, Stuart, let's go back to you, because a lot of people are worried about potential further hacking of our election system. Do you think that we need to worry about the actual vote being hacked into in some way?
It depends on the method that's being used. So I can only speak to my own local polling place because, unlike others, I vote once. There, we fill out a form with a black pencil. We make circles on it. We shove it into a machine. The machine scans it and records the votes. But ultimately, the final count of the vote is the paper ballot. And because of the complexity of handling large amounts of paper ballots, it's really, really hard to compromise that voting system. And, you know, it kind of speaks to what Ms. Newman was saying about, you know, we need to make a real high cost of hacking here. And once you have a paper backup, the cost of hacking is pretty extreme.
Right. Thank you so much for your call. I want to move into ransomware because this is really a huge business that I don't think many of us know much about, and it is a threat. Ransomware, a $1 billion business for cyber criminals. You write it's on the rise for individuals and institutions. What is it?
Yeah, so classic ransomware is malware, you know, malicious software that infects an individual's computer, encrypts the data on the computer, on the hard drive, and then demands a payment to give the person the decryption key so that they can, you know, gain access to their data once again. That's the sort of classic ransomware attack. So, you know, it would be usually a pretty reasonable cost, you know, something that a victim in the moment would see as doable. You know, I don't know if we want to call it $20 or $50 or $100 or, you know, but these sort of low cost things where you're thinking about photos of your children that are on that hard drive that you don't have a backup of, or, a spreadsheet of all your spending for the past 10 years and you need it in case you ever get audited, you know,
right.
That type of thing, and you're just like, okay, for $100 or $50, or I need to just do this and get it back. That's classic ransomware. But now the way it's evolved is that criminals are ransoming entire systems. They're taking over, you know, a system within a hospital or something and saying, well, you can't have your X-ray records back until, or just sort of access to the portal, or, you know, it doesn't necessarily even need to be data anymore, just putting, you know, sort of a wedge in the wheels and saying you can't have access back until you pay. So that's the sort of big jump that's starting to happen over the past 18 months or so, where it's not just all, you know, criminals adding up all these little ransoms from individual people. It's now increasing the scale because, you know, to a big organization like a bank or, you know, like I said, hospitals have been a target, but, you know, now we have hotels in the mix. The cost for them, something that they might find reasonable when they're in a vulnerable position, is thousands of dollars, even hundreds of thousands of dollars, because the cost to remediate the attack and to regain control of their systems on their own, they might feel that that cost would be much greater to pay professionals to do it, especially if they don't have a plan already in place, than to just pay the ransom and try to move on.
So where are all these jerks doing this kind of work?
Well, one thing that's interesting about ransomware is I think for a long time people were kind of dismissing, you know, who is behind these types of attacks as what's called script kiddies, kind of like, you know, low-level online attackers who are, you know, maybe malicious but also just kind of messing around, you know, like the caller before was talking about, you know, is it a hacker, is it a cracker, that type of thing. But, you know, I think at this point it's pretty clear that for a lot of the attacks we're seeing, ransomware and also, you know, this other type of attack called distributed denial of service, things that are disrupting daily service, it's really starting to be groups of hackers, groups of, you know, black hat attackers, networks, or individuals with people working for them, things like that, you know, really coordinated efforts where this is their whole business, you know, this is their whole livelihood.
Mm. Well, we just scratched the surface, but you have certainly centered our attention on some things we need to be aware of and take some action to ward against. Lily, thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks everyone for listening. There's a lot to think about.
Lily Hay Newman, a security writer at Wired, author of the latest piece, The Biggest Security Threats Coming in 2017. It's on our Facebook page in case you would like to read it. And that's the Kathleen Dunn Show. This is Wisconsin Public Radio's Winter Membership Drive. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nabandian here in our Milwaukee studios. And you rely on us for discussions like this on so many topics. We rely on you to keep programs like this on the year. Your gift right now of any amount makes a huge difference, really. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
This whole hour, you've been enjoying the discussion around online security threats and hackers. And I feel like this is such a great example of really complex conversations we have on the show.
So now we ask you to take a few minutes to make this hour and many more hours possible, many more discussions. Choose a gift amount that works for you. Make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And think about making a 9XM Leadership Circle gift of $100 a month or $1,200 or more every year, because you will provide such an important piece of funding for the programs we all rely on.
Let's work together to build on a powerful resource that benefits so many people throughout our state. Make your leadership gift right now at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
I'm Sam from Madison, and my husband and I are sustainers of WPR. Wisconsin Public Radio is really my main source for global news and community news. My husband and I like being sustainers because I don't have to think about the contribution that I write out. It's automatic. And when I hear appeals on the radio, I already feel good, like, yes, I made my donation and I'm making it monthly, so I don't have to think about it. I think it's critical that my husband and I support Wisconsin Public Radio and the programming that they broadcast. We really are lucky to live in this community, and I only want to make it stronger. So I hope you'll join me in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio as a sustaining member.
You can pledge at WPR.org, 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nabandian. We are asking for your support of WPR during our winter membership drive. And if you want to think about an amount, how about $10 a month? Or how about $20 a month? We thank you for whatever it is you decide.
And keep this in mind. Let's say you're already a member or you are going to make your first pledge right now. Either way, you can become a sustainer. Let us know what monthly amount works for you and whether you want that to come from a credit card or bank account.
It's that easy. Once it's set up, your membership automatically renews, so you don't have to wonder if it's your time to pledge or not. So you can start your sustaining membership right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I think a lot of people consider the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as the statewide town hall, because everyone comes together to hear about topics and issues they care about, to ask questions, to share information.
And you benefit from this community. It really is an important one, and we're asking you to help pay for it. Your support is such an important piece of what makes the Ideas Network a reality. So be part of a great tradition with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
At WPR, you choose how much you give. So when you make that first contribution or you renew your membership, a contribution, remember this, a contribution of any amount makes a difference. And here are some suggested amounts. The amount you pay a month for Netflix or your cell phone bill or cable.
Or coffee, which like WPR is probably something you look forward to every
day
and have a couple cups of it. So pledge now. You pick the amount. Your pledge makes a difference. It sure does. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're asking that you make a contribution. And this is important. We're also asking that you give an amount that's comfortable for you. Some give $5 a month. Some give $100 a month. $100 a month or more.
Whatever you can. Whatever right. The amount. We'll use it to support all of the programs that you enjoy. We will be your source for information on entertainment and entertainment right here at WPR. Please give now whatever amount's comfortable for you. WPR.org 888-202-2552.
Yeah, it's our centennial year. Wisconsin Public Radio has been around for 100
Amazing.
Years, so it's a really great
a year.
Time to give, especially if you've not given before. WPR.org 888-202-2552.
Support the radio you love. Ask for the latest WPR t-shirt. It's very spiffy, and it's yours when you give $10 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We forget, we've been around for 100 years, and we know you haven't listened for 100 years, but some of you have listened for years. But Suzanne from Hazel Green says, I just moved to Wisconsin and so glad to be a new listener. So there are people just discovering us.
Right. Just right now. That's wonderful. And Cynthia from Anago says, I rely on WPR for balanced and breaking news early morning and late afternoons. But what I appreciate even more are the delightful, surprising stories you always share.
Excellent.
Thank you. Isn't that
Thank
great?
You. That is great. Thanks, Lisa, so much. Thanks, everybody, for all of your help. We need you. We also want to thank Chris Molina and Marika Saval for producing the hour you just heard. Colleen Duvall for on-air production. I believe we're talking about dolphins tomorrow during this hour. Ain't we got fun.